Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Variety Radio Online. I'm your host, Boston Jess, and my co-host this evening is Mr. Joshua Webb. How are you, Joshua?
What up? I'm good. How are you?
What up? Good.
Good.
It is 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or Eastern Time? What is it? Eastern Standard Time or Eastern Time? I don't know. Anyway, it's 9 p.m. in the evening on 6/12/2019, so June 12th, 2019, and we are live at the moment. We want to say hi to everybody. This is a recap for American Princess Season 1, Episode 3, Down There. So if you have not watched the show yet, you may want to wait a little before listening to the episode, the broadcast that we're doing today. Josh and I are here to talk about American Princess, about Renfairs in general. Any questions you have, feel free. I am a Rennie. I have been a Rennie for over 20 years. Be happy to answer any questions you have. Hopefully some of my other colleagues from Renaissance Fairs will call in. They've all been invited to do so. You're all invited to participate in the chat, which is live through our web stream. You just need a username and a password to sign up, and you can participate. It is free. Or you can call in to our guest call-in line at 516-531-9788. Again, it's 516-531-9788. If you attend Renaissance Fairs, if you work at a Renaissance Fair, if you're thinking about attending a Renaissance Fair, if you're thinking about working at a Renaissance Fair, you should probably either be listening or calling in with your questions. If I don't know the answer, I guarantee you I will be able to find somebody who does know the answer. So hopefully we'll have them live on the air. Last week we were joined by Errol, who we were doing, so what was it, Wicked Pixel? What was the website? I want to say it was Wicked Eye.
Oh, I don't know.
Right. WickedEyePhotography.com. So he joined us last week and talked about his experiences and some of the different experiences that we've had before. Now, Arrow, actually, I forgot to mention this, and I'm surprised that he didn't mention it, but I believe he had some sort of participation in regards to publishing a guide to Rennie's starting the circuit, some sort of informational guide. I will find out more about that and publish that at some point if people are interested. Maybe he doesn't want me to publish that. I don't know. And anyway, in any case,
really
Josh
cool
and I last, it is pretty cool because you need that information of like which shows overlap and putting together an actual circuit to get you going for the entire year because like they move around. I don't because I'm a puss and I don't like, you know, I like, you know, I like indoor plumbing way more than I like to be at the Renaissance Fair. But,
yeah,
you know,
fair.
That may change if I can do glamping. So I'm all about it. The older I get, the less patience I have for tenting it and, you know, having to haul my ass out of a tent off of a mattress and on the mountain in, like, you know, pouring rain to go to the bathroom. It's usually not a fun thing, especially the older I get, the more trips I have to make. And it's not a fun time.
you get a big like
bears and whatnot.
Big Airstream trailer or whatever, like Matthew. Remember, they made a big deal out of that with Matthew McConaughey stayed in one of those big dogs. He had like a little spot on the beach, and you're just like, that's so weird. And then you looked at it and like, no, that's actually a pretty cool little place.
Yeah.
And he's at the
beach. Oh, totally. I live in the Renfair. Last year, I purchased a camper like fourth hand for like dirt cheap. I don't think it's moved in 20 years. It's been on that place. It's in the same spot, but the air conditioning works. And
right.
As long as I get the pumped the bathroom pumped out, the toilet works. Now, I don't tend to use it unless I have an emergency situation. I still try to use the porta-johns, but like in the middle of the night, I'm not going out to do that anymore. But Josh and I were having this conversation last week, the week before, something about that, talking about how everybody I know at the Renaissance Fair had another life at some point in time, and how they all have very, very interesting lives. And it was funny because when I was perving on WickedEyePhotography.com, and of course I clicked on the about Errol because he knows people that I know, but I don't know him personally. He's got this amazing about page that, you know, about living in Anchorage, Alaska, and then moving to Hawaii and living there, and working for a zoo, and working in, he was in the National Guard, or I think maybe he was in the Marines. I don't Science technician. Coast Guard. Yes, United States Coast Guard. So, I mean, everybody has this very... Nobody has a boring life that's been in the Renaissance Fair, either by the amount of shows that they've done or the life that they had before they decide to run away to the Renaissance Fair. And I've said before, the kids that grow up, we didn't even get a chance to talk about this last week because we were talking about the kid and how we didn't like how this kid was portrayed as stealing something from the Renaissance Fair. That was the only kid we really saw. But Josh and I had had a conversation at some point off air that had said that, you know, the kids who are raised in the Ren Fair environment, like there are children who their parents just do this in the summertime. They do one or two shows and they come for the summer and it's kind of like summer camp for them. And then there are people who are born and raised living this migratory life as a Rennie. And we call them Rennie rats sometimes because they grow, you know, they're little, they get little kids and then they grow up and they become, you know, owners, or they take over the family business, or they become performers, or they go to school and they become marine biologists, or, you know, whatever. The point about this is that they're all, a lot of them are homeschooled, but I have never met a Rennie kid who was born and raised in the Renaissance Fair, who is not the most well-rounded, most educated in most fields than any other child I've ever met. Because they have access to all of these people who were, you know, have doctorates and masters in art history and music theory, in performance and stage combat, and also history, costume design and leatherworking and blacksmithing and all this other kind of stuff, but also people who were masters of their field in sales and marketing and business development and all this other stuff. So it's just fascinating all the time. So never underestimate the person that is standing in front of you, no matter how drunk he's acting. They probably have a very interesting life. And if you get a chance to ask them when they're not in character, I'm pretty sure you'll be surprised at how interesting somebody's life is who works at the Renaissance Fair. That's my little plug for people who are really cool that you never know.
Well, yeah, and it's, you know, part of what we talked on and off air is just when you are, it's just kind of even as an allusion to your indoor plumbing thing. You know, when you're in situations where you have what you have, that's, I don't remember who I was having a conversation with about this the other day, and it was just simply about people who are utterly clueless. Especially younger people. And I actually feel less like a grumpy old man every day that passes, because it's just, I'm just being real. You know what I mean? When it comes to just taking things for granted. And so when you're a kid and you grow up around stuff and it's like, oh my gosh, what happens when a thing breaks? We figure out how to fix it. Well, how do we fix it? Well, I don't really know. We'll have to figure that out. You know, when you eliminate the things of, let's just call a guy or let's go buy a new one. So I have no doubt that in those kinds of environments, I mean, outside of mainstream education or apprenticeship, just things like critical thinking, especially when
problem
you
solving.
Are a full-time. Yeah. Yeah. I have no doubt that there's an advantage there over somebody who can just run to the store.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in addition to their normal schooling, like, because legally, the country has a standard that you have to, as a person who is homeschooled, you're still required to learn the same things that everybody else who would be going to school is learning. So on top of that general education from, you know, K through high school, K through 12, you know, they have a lot of other things that they're learning how to do. And they learn in different ways. You know, it's not all book learning, even though they are learning the same thing. They're learning it in different ways. So it's very interesting. But I hope that they at some point bring that into it too, because it's even just not as a child, as an adult, talking to some of these people, and they'd be like, oh yeah, well, you know, and you get into these conversations around the campfire like we saw. I mean, it was a little bit more lighthearted here, but you can get in some pretty deep philosophical questions, and political science majors and people who were in politics for a while. You know, it's just crazy what kind of conversation. You never know what conversation is going to happen at any point in time. And it can be anything from, you know, why we use oregano oil, as we mentioned in the episode today, to, you know, who you think is going to be the next president of the United States and why, or how the socioeconomic, you know, how the price of tea in China typically does affect, you know, the U.S. economy. It could be almost anything. So they're not, they're so random conversations, but they're really great conversations. But back to the indoor plumbing and back to the episode itself. You and I had a brief conversation today on the internet about how I said that this entire episode was based on a fallacy, like based on a falsehood. And I want to say, get this right out of the way right away. Speaking of indoor plumbing, there's no such thing as hot water at the Renaissance Fair. Very rarely are you going to get a hot shower. I mean, a hot shower. Although there are common showers, there are common showers at almost every Renaissance Fair. If not, there is a near truck stop or public house that you can go and take a shower. Those are the exceptions. But if you are having a shower in one of the communal showers on the Renaissance Fair site, they are normally co-ed, so you could potentially open up a curtain and there would be a man or a woman standing there. You never know. Also, some of them are indoors, not many. Most of them are outdoors, and almost none of them have actual hot water. You can have lukewarm water, mostly cold water, but certainly not enough hot water to make it steamy like that first scene. No way. That would never have happened.
Obviously not having my near closest experience, and I was telling just before we got on about the weather here in Tennessee yesterday, and my girlfriend and I spent a good amount of time outside, and I set up a hammock for her, and we cooked outside and roasted marshmallows and everything. And I was talking about my time with the Scouts, because I went from, you know, first grade Tiger Cub all the way through and got my Eagle Scout rank, and just how different it is. It's like, I enjoyed it, but it's just, I haven't done it in a while, because it loses the charm when it's mandatory. You know, it's like, oh shit, yeah, I got to go camping again. You know, I'm going to go home and pack a bag and then go out in the rain or the cold or the heat. But like, oh yeah, it was awesome to just recreationally build a fire. That to say, my experience, as similar as it can get, would be summer camp. And they did have hot and cold water. Having said that, I mean, that's like going by the textbook definition. You know, that's not like
right.
you're saying,
yeah.
like, oh, it's generating steam. It's just a matter of your feet didn't go numb while you were washing your hair, kind of, you know, hot water. And pretty much open air. I mean, there were walls around it, not just open to the public, but, you know, you didn't have every dude didn't have a stall. Even so, I did not catch that part. I get, you know, my main thing was just with this plot device to set up, I think probably first and foremost, this air of mystery, you know, because she goes in there and she doesn't know who she's messing with. It's like, oh, I just need to borrow it. It was shampoo, wasn't it?
Yeah.
She has to borrow shampoo.
Yeah, it was shampoo, but also, like, seriously, like, what was she thinking? Is this, like, she's lucky she didn't get her ass beat.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
again,
probably,
like,
if that was real, you know, she probably would have gotten a tongue lashing. Like, what do you think you're doing? Like, this is not, you ask permission. You don't just take things.
Well, I think, didn't she ask once? She asked and didn't get a response, and then because the queen was busy.
Yeah, well, you ask, you don't get a response. That doesn't mean it's free for you
yeah.
to take. That's
well, no,
not the way this works.
I feel that's still kind of a conceit of the show, that she is still learning how to do things and feels a little bit, just a bit, you know, a big scene, which sadly I can kind of relate to later on, I think about midway through the show, where they go to the market, you know, just that whole kind of attitude of, well, here's my knowledge and here's my life experience, so let me impart it upon you, whether you asked for it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think part of it too was just kind of playing it up for laughs a little bit. This mysterious
mm-hmm.
figure, and she has no idea who's in the shower, and suddenly there's
yeah.
the queen, and
yeah, in all her glory.
Yeah,
and
all her
luscious glory.
Yeah.
So yeah, so we get to see, of course, that's a way for Amanda and the queen. It's a plot device moving forward. However, I do have to say the sets are amazingly, we talked about this last week. Well, Josh, I think you were charging your phone, but Errol and I were talking about how amazing the sets and the costumes are. They are very, very accurate. And I've been really like watching these episodes more than once to like try and like find something that's like not accurate or could not be accurate. You know, like I haven't seen every Ren Faire, so I can't say that it's accurate across the board. None of them, no two fairs are exactly alike. But from what I've seen, these sets could be any Ren Faire because they're often built with plywood, found objects, you know, things that they're like movie sets almost a lot of times, you know, where like it's not like one, it's not like old time movie pet, like where, you know, it's one dimensional or as soon as you turn around the corner, it's a flat wall. But
yeah,
they're,
I mean,
you know what
do,
I mean? Like the really old time.
There's good motion.
Right. But
I mean, yeah,
they
walk around places and.
Right. No, but I mean, like, Renaissance fairs in general, there's a lot of the facade on the outside of, like, everything needs to look finished from what the people can see.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, somebody just sent me a message. And it has to do with Ren Faire. Everything that people can see is made to look like it's authentic. But
mm-hmm.
When you look in Amanda's bedroom, Amanda and Delilah's bedroom, and you see that they're camped out in either somebody's booth or above a pub or something like that. You know, they're not tenting it like the other people. They're not living in a camper. They're actually in one of those permanent structures that we see in the background during that fair language class that the queen was teaching. And I can tell that because it's accurate. The inside of the booth that is not, or the inside of the area that is not seen to the public is not painted. You can see that it's plywood and 2x4s or 2x10s or whatever it is they use to structurally build this building. And, you know, there's no insulation. There's probably cracks where you can see out. You know, bugs can get in. But it's accurate. You know, it looks like it could be, and it looks like the top of my boot. You know, if I walked in there, you would see. Same thing with the shower. The shower stalls, yeah, they do have those cut-off showers so that the shower curtains, so that, one, a lot of the air doesn't get stuck in there, the moisture doesn't get stuck in there, it doesn't get too moldy. But, two, so that you can see that there's a person in there. Sometimes there's two people in there. We'll save that for another time. sometimes there's three people in there. Who knows? I'm not judging. But they do have those kind of curtains, and the stalls, from what I could tell, are accurate. They're basically plywood and 2x4s that are separating the two. They're open all the way across. Even the spigot, the shower spigots, were correct. They're usually too low to do any real good, unless you're short like me, and then they're perfect. But they have, like, it's the cheapest possible spigot that you could have that is basically not a hose. You know, there's no changing anything. There's no speeds. There's no nothing like that. It's legitimately, you turn the water on, it's full blast right on you. And hopefully it's not freezing cold when it happens. So I just wanted to say kudos to the set designers and the costume designers, because it's seriously, I'm missing the fair earlier than I normally do miss the fair, because I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, I just want to be there now. So it's very accurate.
I can imagine that. Well, because, well, sorry, I was going to say, when you get into the, again, as an outsider, you know, I felt like it's done a decent job of capturing, I guess I shouldn't say, you know, capturing the atmosphere, but capturing an atmosphere of sitting here and for as long as you and I've known each other, it would be kind of a neat thing. And then just even now, three episodes, you sort of think, oh, okay, well, because I knew what you did. And then even just in passing, and frankly, these things have, you know, what you're talking about. They have nothing to do with the plot, you know, the quote unquote show. It's all these other things. Like, that's really neat. Oh, well, if it's this photorealistic, if it's this practical, if it's this, you know, as far as the craftsmanship, as far as the costuming and everything, then ooh, this is really interesting. And this is definitely something. Next year, I won't let it sneak past me, right? The Tennessee Grand Fair.
Yes.
This is something to go and check out.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a bunch of them there. You've got North Carolina in the fall. You've got Tennessee and Georgia in the spring. Georgia's just ended. And Oklahoma just ended too, but Oklahoma's not near you. But Tennessee and Georgia just ended. So you just missed them. Yes, the accuracy is there. The vendors' booths in the background, it was like people just went to Renaissance fairs and said, hey, we need you to show up on set for us. Can you bring all your stock with you? One of the guys who's selling the cups, the guy that they're putting rocks in his pants, the bald guy, I forget his name.
Yeah.
His character. The one who has sort of a romance going with Brian, the stuck-up guy. Shakespeare guy. He's a merchant. He's like us. He's like me and Errol. He is a merchant. He sells wooden cups, wooden mugs. Those wooden mugs are real mugs. They are something that can be purchased at the Renaissance Fair. Somebody actually makes those mugs by hand. And so it was just really weird because I was like, oh, I wonder who made those cups. It looks similar to several people that I know. If I had a chance to look at them a little bit closer or froze the frame, I probably could figure out which vendor actually made them. Yeah, those are real. It's very accurate in regards to the sets and the costumes, and even down to the really old soda machine from the 80s that was in the background when they were talking about the family breakfast. Accurate. There's got to be one broken down Coke machine at some point, pop machine somewhere on the fairgrounds. There's probably two or three that are from like the 1980s that they just keep refilling, but it doesn't make any sense to put a newer one because they leave it out all summer, all winter.
Right.
You know, they unplug it and they just let it sit there. They work, but you know, sometimes you may want to wait a week or two before once you plug them back in again, and maybe not the sodas until they come the first time and change them out because they may still be in there from like the summer before. You never know.
Yeah.
You learn these things the hard way. The fair workshop, the language workshop, is real. It is real. It is mandatory for newbies, and no one likes them. No one likes them. The people who are teaching them, people who are attending them, nobody likes them. We basically all wind up sounding like Monty Python's Holy Grail. ridiculous, but I understand why they do it. And it's I really have to give props to the actors and how they really do know their language inside and out. It can be a bit sticky sometimes for merchants to have to speak to somebody on an extended period of time and actually be able to stay in character. At some point you have to drop it and just make the attempt not to use any anachronistic words as opposed to these and those. You know, if you slip a couple in here and there, that's great. But you don't want to talk about, you know, your phone and your computer and Snapchat and that kind of, like, mm-hmm. those things that you think is watches or timepieces or, you know, phones are usually picture boxes or magic picture boxes or so, you know, things that they're usually, you have to try and find creative ways to talk about things that are anachronistic.
Because I'd always...
Fair breakfast?
Oh, sorry. No, go ahead.
You were going to ask a question.
Well, no, I again, there's these things that when that scene, the workshop came up, and I kind of had a flashback of several years ago, at a, it was at a Comic-Con, it was in Miami, and there was a girl who was working with us, volunteering with us, and she, I took two semesters of French in high school, and then in college, I actually tested into honors French, and she was from Paris, and I was like, oh, well, this is great, and I go up and start talking to her, and she starts to, oh, you speak French, and I was like, oh, oui. And she starts, and I was like, oh, sweet Jesus, I don't know
what crazy language you speak.
I have vocabulary. I don't have actual conversational, well, I mean, at one point I did, you know, but it's been a while. And I was like,
I have
clueless.
The same
I'm
problem
done.
With Spanish.
You've heard everything that I got. And so, you know, the workshop, because it's simple to sit up there and, oh, forsooth, fair maiden. It's like, okay, now have a 15-minute conversation with someone this way when you're trying to, you know, when they're trying to pick out their lunch or when they're asking you about the craftsmanship on their cup, you know, oh, how did you make this? And then, you know, explain that with proper verbiage.
Right.
It'd be a totally different thing.
Yeah, it is definitely an art form, and it's funny because I'm trying to pull out the paperwork that I have. I'm sitting in front of my desk here, and there is a folder in here that legitimately says Ren Faire voice lessons, but it's empty, and I don't know what I did. I don't know what I did with the sheets that they hand out to us. I'm trying to find them so I can like give you some examples of some of the things, because Lord, off the top of my head, I'll never be able to do anything. But they have some really good insults that if I can find them, if I can find it, I'll look for it this weekend and see if I can find the workshop information that I have from years ago. I haven't had to go in forever, but I'll see if I can find it, and I'll bring some of that to the broadcast next week, and we'll have some insults and see if anybody can figure out what we're saying to each other. But again, I want to encourage people to give a call in. Again, the guest call-in number is 516-531-9788. And we're here to talk about American Princess and also the Renaissance Fair and whether or not this is an accurate portrayal, which so far it is. Amanda is sort of getting into the groove of things. She's sort of not taken aback by Delilah's mourning activities. She's ringing her bell every morning, apparently, and Amanda is definitely over it. She's not fazed by it in any way, shape, or form, which Josh and I, we've talked about, you know, having relations on the fair site is sometimes an interactive experience because there is no privacy. There is no soundproofing in tents. So if you are having the nookie nookie, other people will probably hear you and sometimes comment on how good or bad of a job you're doing. So there is no privacy at the Ren Fair. So that was funny and accurate. So she's over that. You do usually have to bring your own stuff with you, so there is no communal soap and water and all that kind of crap. So I mean soap and water, but like soap and shampoo. I have one of those little caddies.
Which again, you know, just and that's honestly a legitimate 21st century self-reliance thing. I've been, I don't remember where it was, shocked before to get into a hotel and you look and into the shower and there's no shampoo and conditioner in the shower. What the heck? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you have to go down and hopefully you're not in the shower. So it's not a huge deal to just put some shoes on and go down to the, oh, you know, we wanted to make sure. Like, no, dude, this is like America, isn't it? I mean, this is not like some kind of hotel in Zimbabwe or something. Like, give me some shampoo and conditioner. But yes, no. The whole thing of, again, you are there to take care of yourself. We're not, nobody's in, because you talked, like you'd mentioned last week too, about how the economics of it work. Right. If you're there working, you have the money that you make there. So no, nobody's going to sit here and go out to flipping Costco and buy a 50-gallon drum of, you know, Irish Spring body wash. You take care of that.
Right.
Stay dirty,
yeah.
I guess. Until I guess you probably
no,
some
don't
people,
stay dirty.
At some point. Yeah, well, I was going to say at some point somebody probably gets ripe enough that they'll just. You throw you in the lake or hose you down or something, but.
I mean, yeah, it'll get to the point where somebody will finally say something to you or not, you know, or you work in a job in which it doesn't matter. But I mean, you're not going to have a lot of friends if you smell. That being said, there are people who don't really take showers with water. Like they'll wash with sand. I mean, I'm not going to judge. I don't know those people in general. Like, they're not really in my
your circle?
Knowledge base. Yeah, they're not really in my circle. I don't have anything against them. I have not encountered. I mean, I'm sure I've encountered them. I just haven't. You don't usually ask people, like, how do you take a shower? you just assume that it's with water. Every once in a while, you get somebody who's like, no, I don't do that. Just like the woman was just like, Natasha was just like, no, I don't do pills. There are definitely people who would rather grin and bear it instead of taking any type of chemical in their, you know, any type of chemical. you know, I'm trying not to extend this any further than possible, but I did have somebody who was working with us, one of my business partner, if that makes any sense, just go with it. Because we're not full-time business, we're not actual business partners, we just kind of share a space, but she has an actual business partner. He was down visiting and was not feeling well. He went home during the fair day. He was looking pretty bad. He was in his van all night, and the next morning he comes down to the booth and we're getting ready. It was Monday, which kind of ties into what we're talking about during this, because this is definitely the week off. This episode deals with the week in between Saturday and Sunday. So we saw Saturday and Sunday look like a 3-day weekend. And then this episode is dealing with a lot of the behind the scenes for the performers of things that they're doing, going shopping at the market, you know, all that kind of stuff. Breakfast morning, camping at night kind of thing. That's accurate. Usually we wind up going out to breakfast in the morning. So he came down to go out to breakfast with us, and he legitimately looked green with pain. Like, not even just like pale. He looked like he was nauseous from the pain of what he was having. And I said to him, "What are your symptoms?" And he wouldn't take any type of Advil or anything like that to reduce his temperature or anything. So he was just suffering through it. And he says, "You know, my head is killing me. I can't move my neck." And I was like, "Your head is killing you. Your neck is stiff and you can't move your neck. Do you have any other symptoms? Like, are you having stomach problems? Are you running to the port-a-john? Are you feeling nauseous? Do you have, you know, any type of upper respiratory infection? Like, is it, you got snots? What's happening? You're like, what are your other symptoms?" He's like, "I don't have any other symptoms. I just feel like absolute trash. I can barely even talk right now. It hurts so much." And I said, so your head hurts and your fever, do you have a fever?" He's like, "I have a fever. It's like 103. I said, "You have 103 fever and you've had 103 fever for an extended period of time because you won't take anything to reduce your fever, right? And your neck hurts, but you have, and it's very stiff and you can't move it and you have a pounding headache. And you have no other symptoms." And he's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "You need to go to the hospital." And he's like, "I don't do hospitals." I'm like, "You need to go to the hospital." And he's like, "No." I said, "You have meningitis." And he's like, "Okay, come on. You're taking it to the next level." I said, "I'm not taking it. I'm not overreacting here. You fucking have meningitis. Go to the hospital. You have no other symptoms except for a splitting headache, 103 fever for an extended period of time, and a very stiff neck that you can't move, and you have no other symptoms. You need to go to the hospital. We're not asking at this point in time. You're contagious. And if you're contagious, you served people. Like, you were talking to people at the rent fair. And we might have to throw away our entire stock because you're a pighead and you wouldn't go to the doctor earlier." So, of course, we bring him to the hospital, and they quarantine him because they think he has meningitis. And I was like, "See, I freaking told you." Turns out he did have meningitis, but it was West Nile meningitis, so it was not communicable. But, you know, I wasn't overreacting. I just happened to know what the symptoms are. I'm like, "You got to go to the hospital." So there are those people that I was like, you know, you fried your brain. Basically, you have not taken any Advil or anything like that for, you know, more than, I think it was 2 days, something like that, that he had a fever of over 103 degrees. And I was like, "Lord, you know, you could cause yourself brain damage that way. You really can. You can actually legitimately fry your brain that way." Because he didn't like hospitals and he doesn't like to put any chemicals in his body. It happened. So talking about that healthcare issue also. There's lots of stuff. I don't know how I got on that subject. Pills, not taking pills. So there are people there who don't like to take any chemicals. And I understand that too. What else? The family breakfast where they explained to her that, like, I loved how she just assumes that they're going to cook breakfast for her. And then Tizzle basically says to her, like, "That's not how this works. You're like, I'll cook myself something and I'll give you half of it. But this is the one time only deal. You need to go to the market and go get your own food. And you're going to cook it yourself." which is accurate. So she, you know, the gloves are off with her. Like they kind of give her, like, you get first one's free each time. First one's free. Next time you have to figure it out yourself. You know, they're kind of gently but sternly pushing her in the direction of self-sufficiency.
Well, because especially she has made the decision clearly and has stuck with it. Well, you know, whatever kind of time frame we're at in episode 3, made the decision. No, she's not going to go back to that life. She's going to stay there. She's going to stay with these new people and make these new friends. And whether it's for a little more of a, there's no good way to say that, a not quite long term, or whether it's just, the point is it's indefinite. Okay, well then we're not going to coddle you. You're not a guest. This is not, you're not,
right.
It's not a hotel. There's no turn down service. We don't have continental breakfast, right? You know, homeboy there. And then this is not the omelet station in the hotel lobby. If you want to eat, go get some food, bring it back here, and cook it for yourself. This is, you're not going to be a guest anymore, right? She has a job. She has her wardrobe.
Yeah.
So, come on. Like, we get it, but, I mean, definitely, sooner rather than later, go ahead and start wrapping your brain around the fact that nobody...
Yeah.
Nobody makes breakfast for you.
Yeah, like it's, you're not. This is not the pub. We're not gonna. We do that for a living. Now you make your own food.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, there is something, like she mentioned it early on, how she's like, I think I got the hang of this, and I traded this for this food, or I traded a massage for this, you know, a hand massage for this. You know, this, the muffins or something like that. And like, people will work on the barter system. So that is accurate also. I like how she started to become a little bit more self-sufficient that way, in which, you know, they said like exactly what you just said, like, we're not going to coddle you anymore. You need to figure this out. And she's starting to figure that out, in this episode of like, okay, this is how things work. Let me see if I can, again, problem solving skills and thinking outside the box. How do I get what I need? And so she traded services for payment in some way, shape, or form, in the form of either food or, you know, silverware or whatever she needed. And remember, I don't know if we talked about this on air or not, when I talked to you about on Monday mornings we'll have our day off and basically nobody really does anything. There's a thing, and it's not in every rent sphere, there's a thing called bizarre bazaar. Like bizarre, like weird, bazaar, like a get-together flea market kind of thing. So bizarre bazaar is basically breakfast where you bring some sort of monetary payment, small payment, and depending on who it is or where it is, somebody will volunteer to cook, but you have to chip in by paying them. Usually it's a food booth who has like excess food from the weekend will then basically decide to cook up the rest of that so it doesn't go bad by next week. And then you just pay them, you know, for what they're making. Or somebody on the fair site will actually go to Costco, like you said, and buy food with the money from last week that they received from cooking, and they'll continue to do this. It's sort of like a community thing. It's like family breakfast, but it's usually really early in the morning on a Monday, and I like to sleep in, so I never make it. but in addition to that, it's a big flea market. So it's a place where you can trade things that you have picked up along the way. So when she's saying that I traded a hand massage for these muffins, or I traded this for this, she's not wrong. It's very easy to do that because usually on that Monday, everybody gets together with whatever weird thing they've picked up over the you know, the road for the last year or two or whatever. They don't have room for it, and they kind of like trade, either for money or for actual bartering. Like, I like that scarf and I like that skirt. Okay, we can trade, kind of thing. Or I need that mug and I have $5. You know, will you take $5 for that mug? Sure, here. And then you could actually walk down the line and be like, you know what? I like this skirt better than this mug. Do you want to trade with me? So sort of like Yankee Swap slash flea market. Each one works differently.
Right.
But she became self-sufficient is the point that I'm trying to make by doing something similar. And it is accurate that she would be able to do that in addition to then also going shopping at the local market. I felt bad for Brian this episode. Shakespeare?
Mm-hmm.
The DJ scene was painful to watch. And honestly,
yes,
that was bad marketing. That was bad marketing on the side of the fair. Whoever was doing their marketing schedule was way off the mark there. That news station, I mean that radio station, specifically that morning show, was the absolute wrong place to put Brian. And they should have known that. That's not the market that we're looking for. When people show up from a show like that, they're usually there to just get drink and grab tits. You know what I mean? Like, not always.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to caveat that. That's not always everybody who listens to those shows. But when you have that type of lowbrow humor, they obviously the DJs weren't getting it. And they were obviously making fun of the whole situation. We don't want people who are going to come who are going to make fun of us. We want people who are going to come who are going to play with us and enjoy the day with us instead of making it more difficult for us and for the people who honestly want to enjoy themselves. So it's otherwise it's just going to be a waste of time for you because if you should, like we were talking about yesterday, last week, you know, if you show up and you're going to be all judgy and you don't really want to be there and you're really just there to get drunk, you can get drunk anywhere. It's a lot cheaper to get drunk at your local bar than it is to go get drunk at the Renaissance Fair. So they should have known better as a caveat, but I realize they have to have some sort of plot device to show that Brian just really needs to evolve into somebody who's a little bit less tight ass, which obviously by the end of the show we find out that he's a lot less tight ass than we thought he was. What did you think about what did you think about that scene? Was it painful to watch for you too, or was it just me?
The radio? Yeah. Well, I mean, listen,
yeah.
I've got that's what I'm working on right now. For those of you new to this program, Bubba Fest in Knoxville, Tennessee, August 23rd to the 25th. And we have people like Nikolai Coster-Waldau, played Jamie Lannister from Game of Thrones, just this week, or well, end of last week, announced Kari Payton, Andrew Cooper from The Walking Dead, Ken Ezekiel and Jerry from The Walking Dead, Michael Madsen from Quentin Tarantino, a whole bunch of his movies, and just a ton of different actors. But yes, I'm working with media partners. I've got another meeting tomorrow with a local radio conglomerate, you know, three different stations and everything to kind of work with them and work out a schedule for advertising and for promotions and. So that was my thing. It's like, that's the worst fear is that you're going to get, oh yeah, oh, we'd love to have so-and-so. Let's talk to, and now obviously, I shouldn't say obviously, but listen, if you're going to have Jamie effing Lannister on your radio program, you're going to, because of what Game of Thrones was, regardless of your opinion on how it ended, you're going to be respectful. But okay, oh yeah, sure. Oh, you've got somebody from some kid show, or something that's just went off the air 25 years ago and nobody's ever heard of them since. That's the fear, right? Is that they'll go on here? Sure, we'll talk to them, and it's just going to be, oh man, haven't heard about you in over a decade, and it'll just be. Like, even if it's not as deliberately humiliating as this radio interview was on the show, that's just a nightmare. That you're going to put somebody out there, and not only they will be humiliated, but, which, I mean, for me, would be the worst part. But then also, it's like you made a laughing stock of the entire show, the entire convention, the entire Ren Faire. So it was incredibly uncomfortable. And because of my background in broadcasting, I just couldn't. I don't know. I couldn't imagine being one of those people. You know, I don't think he really does it anymore. I never listened to the show, but you knew. Let's just say 15 years ago, you knew if you got booked on Howard Stern, what was going to happen. It didn't really matter who you were. He was going to make fun of you.
Right. They should have known better.
But in this case, though, on the show, it's just like you're a couple of like local radio schlubs. Who the hell are you? You know. But yeah, still, the fair, in this case, has an obligation of due diligence. Don't put anybody in front of hosts, interviewers, if that's what they do, if it's all gags, if they make fun, and if it's a bunch of slapstick BS, and that's their shtick, is just dick and fart jokes, okay? Nobody's going to have a great interview with that kind of crowd for publicity purposes, especially, no offense, especially a dude who's dressed like William Shakespeare. They are going to make fun of him from the moment they see him. Don't put anybody on that show.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially not Brian. You could have put David or, you know, AKA Pizzle on that show, and it probably would have gone over a little bit better. But Brian's such a tight ass that, like, you should have known better that was the wrong person to send for that job. And, you know, they even said it to Brian that was like, you know, why are you getting dressed up to go to the radio show? And he's like, oh, the disc jockeys find it amusing. And I'm like, well, some of them do. It depends on which ones you're going to. But, I mean, granted, this is much like a Howard Stern type of show, or like Z100, you know, morning show, although that's not true anymore. But it used to be a little bit more politically incorrect and a little more wild than it is now. But, you know, something like that, like some kind of morning show where it's just like, you know, basically a talk show, and they have this. That's not the right place for you. And I felt bad because it was very painful to watch, and they should have known better. They're spending money, might as well put their marketing where it wants. And again, it's just really bad marketing that they should have known better.
Yeah.
And we have seen things like, from experience, I have seen what happens when they do actually put money into the cheapest slot, which is something that they know they're going to get, you know, that it's not their target market, and what happens when they come to the fair. Those people are not interested, and I'm not saying those people as in everybody always, but people who are not your target market, who show up to Renaissance fairs and who are not interested in handcrafted work, in live entertainment, in having a good time and playing along, and are just really there for drinking and you know, drinks and boobs, that's really not... It's really not the best way to portray Renaissance Fair, is basically get drunk and look at tits. It never ends well. There's a lot of security calls at that point. There's a lot of obnoxious behavior. I've had people get drunk because the pub is across the street, come behind my booth, which is a private area, and start pissing on it, where I've gotten into like fights with people because they were peeing on the back of my booth. Like legitimately, like, you better get out of here before I kick you in the head, because I was on a deck and he was standing below me, like argumentative, like, you know, you don't know who you're messing with kind of thing. And I'm like, I don't care who you think you are. I will call security on you. Get out of my private space. So, you know, it's really not a good idea. So I kind of was, everybody makes that mistake at least once, but I guess it was good that we saw it. The campsite talking. Actually, before we get any further, I just wanted to make a comment here. One of the group owners basically said he can't call in because time is a factor for him. He has two jobs and a business and basically a life to maintain. So he did say, so I watched episode 3 today. It's not bad. It gave some context to week life, but nothing about what really happens during the week with basically Rennie's building stock and et cetera during the week. He says he's still concerned about the level of drinking portrayed and wondered if that's realistic or not, because not every fair is the same. But the idea of community coming together, that looked like it was handled well. So again, the same comments that we were making about the first two episodes, the positive things about fair seem to be handled very accurately. Most of the negatives, but not all of the negatives, are being portrayed accurately. And there's a lot that's being left out. Like, you're only seeing part of this because it's coming from the performer's point of view and not from the merchant's point of view. And I still say to Bruce, thank you for your comments. I think that we should still let it simmer a little bit longer because we can't really say what it's going to be like until the very end. You know, so I think at some point there will have some information about more accuracy about the working that actually happens during the week. Because in this episode, as you saw, Josh, there really wasn't a lot of work happening. It was mostly marketing from a couple of guys, and yeah. Everybody else seemed like they were sitting around a campfire shopping. And that
yeah,
is true for some people, but yeah, there is free time and you do have to go shopping and run your errands and do that. But the entire week is very rarely like that. Like we said before, people are looking to make extra money because they do have to provide for themselves and save up for their trip to the next show. So mm-hmm. a lot of people are actually working for vendors, merchants who make their own product during the week. The drinking, there's a point, but I think the level of drinking is to show Amanda and her somewhat addiction to alcohol. I think, do you agree with that? That it's trying to showcase that, like, she's hitting the bottle a little too much?
Because I think that there's the comment that's made when they leave the market about, you know, she has provided this very, very blunt feedback that was unsolicited as far as what goods and services, which I also, by the way, I also kind of felt that was, it lent a little bit to just her being in this totally new environment because she's talking about like, oh my gosh, tea tree oil and lavender oil. And oh, it's $5.99 and I pay $40 for this or I get it. So in a way, like if she stopped and thought about it, would have been a, holy crap, this is more of my life was just a facade. Like it doesn't actually cost $40 for 3 ounces of lavender oil. You can get this stuff,
right?
You know, quality stuff for under 10 bucks. Says me. I mean, it's not like I go out and buy a lot of lavender oil, but I like the way it smells. I'm just not the one that buys it. But anyway, and then she offers, you know, this unsolicited opinion about the layout and how this should be branded and this should be marketed and this should be over here and you don't put these two things together. Like, excuse me, this is my business. You need to leave. You're not welcome here anymore. Don't tell me how to do my business. And when it comes to the drinking part, then they walk outside and the comment is made, does it feel like maybe you're trying to fix other things so that you don't have to pay attention to what really needs fixing, a.k.a. you, a.k.a. the fact that you caught your fiancé getting the old, you know, last chance beeger.
Heave-ho.
you know.
Yeah.
Like an hour or two before the vows, and then you ran away, and then you fell, and then you got lost, and you fell in with us. And then when your family and friends did come to get you, you told them to go away. So, you know, so maybe we are kind of leading up to that of you are doing a whole heck of a lot to just completely avoid what is happening in your life.
It happens. It is accurate.
Well, yeah.
People do run away. Sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't.
And people
eventually
do.
You have to, you know, you're going to have to pay the piper. Eventually, you're going to have to deal with it.
Yeah. And people do sit around and drink nonstop to avoid what's going on. But eventually, you have to pay the piper.
I mean, I don't want people to get the wrong impression. There is drinking. It does happen. And people are having a good time. As long as the work gets done, you know, you work hard, you play hard. There's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that they're not showing the work hard part of things. They're just showing the drink hard part of things.
And honestly, it goes back to kind of the shower situation of it. This is not a first comment that I made to you when I caught up on it was I thought this was like a documentary, but what I had in my mind is like a docudrama or a drama, whatever, like a Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Like, yeah, it really happens, but they had a production meeting beforehand. It's like, it's not a documentary.
Right.
It's not supposed to be a true story behind the scenes of how a Renaissance fair works. This is a fictional show, and let's appreciate all the things that are accurate and are true. And as you can, well, you enjoy your job, I understand, but to a viewer, watching somebody sit, one of Amanda's jobs last week, watching her spend her afternoon muck out the horse stables, that's not good television. Right, just a constant where we see other people go by, where's Amanda? Oh, she's, you know, shoveling horse shit. That's not good television. And so with less emphasis on that and more on the having a drink and sitting around the campfire, and which, again, I can relate to that kind of atmosphere, and everybody sits around and there's a song or two, or at least a couple of verses, and you tell some jokes and tell some stories. And but that's, you know, I mean, that's
I mean,
TV.
I don't think anybody is particularly expecting there to be an entire episode on, you know, what happens in doing week work, but I think that there should be some reference to it in some way, shape, or form. Like, no, man, I really can't.
Yeah.
I really have to go to bed. I have to, you know, I have to do week work tomorrow because I need to make some money for the next show. Something, you know, some reference to that, or something having to do with the merchant saying, you know, like walking by and be like, I'm glad you guys, something like, you know, can you, you know, come sit down with us? I'm sorry, I can't. I got to go to bed. I have to work tomorrow. You know, like something, you know, it just seems like there's no, and I understand it. I'm not getting down on it. I understand. But I also think there's plenty of time for something like that to happen, and that I don't necessarily think it's not going to happen. It doesn't have to be anything major, but they should indicate or at least show somebody in the background actually working while these guys are effing off.
And it's also possible
the
that they're kind of
like,
building.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, it could be that we're getting to that. Because, again, with the journey of Amanda, and it's just like, you know, I mean, maybe next week, now that she's had this moment and she's embraced it for crying out loud, taking a dive in a mud pit for the queen.
Right.
She seems to be more embracing of what I would call selling out in a good way. You know, selling out and being just into it, literally throwing herself into it.
Yeah.
So maybe, you know, maybe soon will be, she's not going to sit here and complain about this or lament this. It's just a matter of, well, time to get up and shake my boobs and serve some beer.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And so what we're seeing, though, from this is people who are on a either performance level, who already have their lines down and have their scenes done, and not necessarily the smaller people, the smaller groups of people who are constantly reviewing their acts and trying to come up with new routines and things like that, because you would see a lot of that happening. But again, this is only the third episode. I agree with you 100%. I think there's plenty of time at this point to establish that other things besides drinking happen. And really, we haven't seen them. They're not day drinking. You know, like they're not sitting around the campfire in the middle of the day getting sloshed. It's nighttime. There's not like a lot of electricity. There's not much to do if you don't have electricity at your campsite other than sit around the fire and screw around. You know, like that is the whole point of camping. You know, you go to where the light is, and if there's only a campfire, what are you going to do around the campfire? You drink and you have fun. You tell stories and you goof off and you, they were doing some language play there, which was very fun. The market scene, I do have to say for Amanda, Amanda could come merchandise my store all she wants. I absolutely agreed with everything she was saying in regards to the way that that store was merchandised. However, Delilah was perfectly right. She was absolutely right. Like, sometimes you shouldn't fix what isn't broken. If somebody didn't ask you to help, you know, once he gave you the line that if I wanted to know how I was doing everything wrong, I would call my wife. That was a clear indication that this is not okay. She should have backed off.
Correct.
But she had to double down. You know, she had to double down, and now she can't go get her beauty products. What I thought was going to happen was that she was going to get inspired and start creating her own line of – the interesting thing would be that she would get inspired and start creating her own line of skincare and hair care and start selling it at the Ren Faire because – that is something that can be done at the Renaissance Fair. There are people who make soaps and shampoos and stuff that you can actually trade for. Or, you know, they're merchants. They sell them to the public. They're wonderful products. And they usually pride themselves on being locally sourced and, you know, made in America and all that kind of crap. So, I mean, that's what I thought was going to happen, but that's not what happened. But he was right. He was absolutely right to kick her out. That being said, she can come to my store and merchandise all she wants. Brian had me dying with the jokes. On, well, one other thing, Pizzle, David Pizzle, sitting around the campfire with Amanda basically said, you know, and he said the same thing that Delilah said, which was, you know, it's not that the it's not that Maggie doesn't hate her. She just everything she doesn't set, which is true. She just irks her the wrong way. But in general, he's trying to do her a favor and tell her your thought process is a little different here. You're coming from a place of negativity, and the Ren Faire is all about positivity. So his response that, you know, you're coming from a place of you do a lot of no but, and this environment is more yes and, which is a very improv way of putting things. You know, when you're doing improv, you have to take it and run with it, as opposed to you'll kill the improv if you contradict somebody and say no but this, because it takes you out of the moment and you're contradicting somebody. It needs to be yes, and I'm going to double down on this and take it a little further. And then the next person says yes, and they move forward with that. And so she's basically killing the vibe by saying no but all the time, from coming from negativity. And people just don't have the time for that. You know, it's not that kind of world that you're in. You're not in Kansas anymore, Dorothy.
Right.
You know? So he's right, and hope. And she's starting to see, because by the end of the show, she does, yes, and. When she falls in that mud, instead of, you know, breaking down and breaking character and being like, oh, this is disgusting, you know, running off, she takes it and she runs with it. And what happens when she takes it and she runs with it is she finally becomes part of the Renaissance Fair.
Right.
She is an active participant of the fair, and she finally gains the queen's approval because she did yes and instead of no but.
Which, of course, was doubly amusing because it might be her first week at the Ren Faire, but it's not their first week. So they have a contingency plan for giant puddles of mud along the parade route, which...
Right.
I mean, that just made it all the more hilarious, and exactly like you're saying too, it made it more hilarious as a viewer, and it made it more of a thing for her to just kind of Because those were, at that point, that those are your only two options, is to look at them laying that platform, basically like a little bridge, for the queen to walk across, and just completely losing your mind and throwing a fit that you're filthy from head to toe, for no reason, or just laughing because what a buffoon, you know? What an idiot! Oh my gosh, I can't believe I did this! Oh man, what a mess! Look what I did to save the queen.
The wooing. We didn't talk about the wooing scene where they're sitting around the fire and they're actually practicing their wooing techniques, which
Oh yeah.
it kind of gets to the point where that's how we find out about down there on the queen and about her luscious garden or her what was it, her bountiful shrubbery, whatever. To be fair, logically, you did see those communal showers. They're not the easiest to get into awkward spaces on a regular basis. So, the fact that she's a little bit more authentic is also fairly accurate because, getting the shower thing is a little difficult to do, especially when
Well,
there's
yeah.
10 other people waiting for you. And trying to do that in the cold, in getting wet and doing it in the cold is a little difficult, especially since it's awkward in general. Eventually, the queen, the comment where they say, God save the queen, and then you hear the guy say, God shave the queen, under his breath. God shave the queen has been a running thing for generations. You will undoubtedly, at some point, hear a fair worker under their breath say, God save the queen. So it's not necessarily related to that or to this show. It's just funny that that's
Huh.
how they wound up working it in. But it's pretty funny because it's a common phrase for somebody to say, if they're far enough back and there's nobody in the booth, instead of saying, God save the queen, because you say it so often during the day that it's kind of like an amusing little thing to be like, God save the queen. So it is actually something we say. And the queen was shaved by the end of the episode. Huzzah.
With a little help from her friends.
Right. I mean, who hasn't had that? Who hasn't actually made their lover go down there and do that? I'm joking. But not really.
Not
Kind of.
me.
But not really. But not really. Really? You're missing out.
No,
It's a very interesting experience, I do have to say.
I'm an expert with a
You're an
blade. I'll just
expert?
stay with my own expertise.
It's a bit nerve-wracking for both the person who's shaving and being shaved. Of like, oh, please don't hurt me.
I'm not saying I don't trust you. I'm just saying I don't trust you.
I'm just saying, that's my balls. I'm just saying.
Yeah,
That's my manhood. There's a problem here.
it's
Right.
very, very small margin of error.
Right. I'm going to try and move this on as much as possible. Brian and Pizzle, aka David, also trying to kind of pass out things at the market and sort of kind of loosen up Brian, aka Shakespeare. He had me die. That whole scene at the market where he just keeps reading the crowd wrong. It's just hysterical to me, because that you always have that guy who's like the A plus in the class, but he just cannot put that knowledge into practical use. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Just no, like no context clues. Yeah. They have
Yeah,
it figured out.
but
I
like,
have it figured out. Just keep watching me and I'll show you how much I have it figured out. And they don't pick up that
yeah, he doesn't.
nobody cares.
No. He starts very well, just like Amanda does originally, and then it just goes horribly, horribly bad. My favorite, what he had me dying with the joke, with the dirty joke. it was like, would that she be an open arse? That one. That's
Remember that. I
actually
don't.
an actual Shakespearean quote where he says to her, would that she be I don't have it down right now, but I should have written the actual line. But it is actually a line from Romeo and Juliet. Yoshio says it, talking about Rosalind, basically saying, like, were she that fruit that resembles, you know, a woman's parts, and that you were there to pop it. So basically, he says, would that she be an open arse, and you be something, I forget what it is, but basically popping her ass. And the woman goes, hey, her ass is closed, man. And I was just like, oh, of course. Like, of course you had to go to the raunchiest line. You know, what are the raunchiest lines? Like, Shakespeare definitely is the king of the dirty joke and very artfully told. He is a nasty, he can be a nasty big person when it comes to dirty jokes. If you really look at them, it is very amusing. He is very artful with the nasty joke and double entendre. Romeo and Juliet being one of the plays that has the most sexual innuendo in it, specifically Mercutio, who has the bawdiest lines, and so artfully crafted that, like, every once in a while you kind of look at it like, shall we speak about country matters? Referring to a woman's area, because they put the emphasis on the first part of that word as opposed to the end part of that word. It's how it's spoken, it's how it's phrased. Very interesting. But of course, Brian has to go flat with one of the raunchiest quotes. And then, of course, he tries to double up, and he's trying to shift gears. And, you know, he's like, oh, okay, well, I'll go with, you know, a more lowbrow comedy. And I guess he tries to force a fart, but we find out that that is not what actually happens, and that he joins the shark club, where he basically shits his pants because he pushes it out too far. I mean, that's pretty amusing. Gross, but sort of something that I guess that helps him evolve, because by the end of the show, he gets it. Art joke's good. Actual ass explosions, not so good.
I don't know. I don't have anything on that. I you know, it's just the. I mean, hats off to him for giving it a shot. I think because everybody wants to, like you said, because it's kind of a lowbrow thing of. Let me go for the easy gag, the cheap gag. In wrestling, they would call that the cheap pop, right? What's the thing you could do? Mick Foley would do that, like whatever city they were in, right? Like so if they were in St. Louis, then he would be doing his promo and he would talk about how great it was to be right here in St. Louis, and the crowd loves hearing their own city, right? And so everybody just would just yell and cheer and applaud, and it's the cheap pop, right? It's the easy way to get everybody into it. And so, yeah, he goes for the easy way. Like, what's the best way to get everybody to laugh? Everybody loves a good fart joke. And then he, yeah puts a little too much effort into it. But at the same time, you know, for performance purposes, if it is acknowledged that it is a cheap pop and that is actually part of the gag of how ridiculous it is, and then in this case, I mean, dude, you're William Shakespeare and you've ended up crapping your pants. Come on now. Right. I mean, have a little bit of respect. Because like you're saying, even the body and you know, actual phrasing and innuendos and double entendres of Shakespeare, but it's well crafted. Like, come on, man, you don't go for the cheap gag, for the easy joke. You got to do something. You got to get it in there. You got to slip it past most people. Did you ever take one of my favorite? I'm sorry, this is super off topic, but it made me think of this. If you ever watched the show, remember the cartoon Animaniacs?
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg produced it from, And like you go, and I don't know if they still are or not because I got off of them, but a couple of years ago it was on Netflix, and I went, oh my God, this is amazing, and it's a perfect thing to watch at work because on Netflix no commercials, it's 22 minutes, and you can, and you're just like looking at these jokes, but the things that, as a kid, it's just ha 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 ha. As an adult, the wordage, the word choice, the verbiage, the what is in the what pronunciation, what syllable is emphasized, and you're just like, oh my God, this is great. How in the world? I can't believe this. They put this in a kid's cartoon. That's hilarious. Because it's not dirty and it's not simple. It's not fart jokes. It's
Right.
just it's funny and it's clever, and that is always the best way to be.
Right. Well, that's the difference between bawdy and raunchy. You know, if it's, there was a couple of things, even in that episode, that were bawdy, bordering on raunchy, but they were bawdy, not raunchy. Like when the wooden cup merchant was, it was a little tiny scene where he was talking with a girl with really big boobs, and she stuck a pickle. I don't know if you saw the pickle in her boobs. And then he was talking to her, and she bit the pickle, and he says, "Can we trade?" And so that was a bit of a proposition there, but it was a bawdy proposition as opposed to a raunchy proposition.
Right.
Because he could
True,
have
true.
easily been like, you know, just you do that off the top of my, rah, rah. You know, like, no, that's raunchy. Bawdy is, can we trade? You know, basically, I'll give you the cup, you give me the same treatment as the pickle. You know,
Right.
that kind of thing. He's joking. He's not serious. It's a body joke. It's well crafted. It's a bit for a cheap pop, I would say. It is a bit from your, it is a bit lowbrow. He probably could have done something better. The best type of bawdiness I've ever seen have been from pickle vendors. They're like, come bite my pickle, come eat my pickle. You know, I have big pickles and little pickles and fat pickles and thin pickles, and it all depends, and size does matter, and it's not the motion of the ocean, but the size of pickle. You know, that kind of thing. Like, there's all sorts of fun little things that the pickle pirates basically say, and sometimes we call them pickle pirates. So just see, they usually have like these little pickle barrels, and they run around, and their body—that's what their job is. That's how they sell their pickles. FYI, pickles are a really good way to rehydrate yourself and rehydrate some of your electrolytes. So if you're ever feeling faint in the heat, pickle juice or pickles—something salty—is a
Sure.
good way to prevent yourself from passing out. So pickles are always refreshing and they're good. So keep that in mind. I think olives work too, but pickles are better. And it's not just a pickle. You can sip a couple of sips of pickle juice too, if you can stand it. I love pickle juice, but that's just me. But yeah, he finally does get it right with the quote that he has about breaking wind and break it in your face, lest I break it from my behind. Is a fart joke, and he follows it up with the appropriate, because the kids don't quite get it, and he follows it up with the appropriate noise from his mouth and not from his butt. So he gets it. Brian gets it at the end. The queen is shaved at the end. She's happy with Amanda. Amanda, oh, the last thing that happens, not the last thing, but the last major thing that we haven't talked about so far is the turn of Helen, the executioner.
Oh,
And her, the tip of her tongue is missing. So Helen returns, and obviously we figure, I think she's the roommate, you know, that Delilah doesn't have anymore. But we think that that's going to go a lot differently than it goes down. You know, I expected there to be some sort of confrontation, as I think most people did. But she handled it pretty well. And she made a good comment that I would have also made, which was, you know, I was heavily compensated, and now I can tour the circuit in a camper with a hot tub. So I mean, she's good. She's glamping from now on. She doesn't have to worry about camping in a tent. She's gonna have a camper and a hot tub, and she's And, you know, now she can rejoin. She's probably in a position at this point where she doesn't need to speak. So a lot of her work will probably be nonverbal anyway, since she's an executioner, and executioners don't normally speak. They do. Not how I thought it was going to go down, but I could see how it worked out well for her. I'd still be pissed if I lost the tip of my tongue.
Oh, yeah.
And I kind of got distracted because I'm like, couldn't they do something for her? But, I mean, it's not like you could have a prosthetic tongue. It doesn't quite work that way.
I think that's one that, okay, yeah, because that was the thing, too, that they added in the first episode, that she bit off the tip of her tongue and she swallowed it. So it's not like put it in some ice and they can reattach it. Yeah, you're pretty much just done at that point.
Your tongue grows back. Yeah, it doesn't really grow back, but it will heal very quickly. But I was like, at the same time, is there not some sort of plastic surgery that you can do that like will extend her tongue out a little bit so she can actually make the S sound? I don't know.
But it wouldn't come to a tip.
That's pretty much that episode.
It wouldn't come to a point.
That's true.
Because I mean, Gene Simmons.
Well, it could if you remove other parts of it.
Oh yeah, that's just a whole big mess.
I mean, they could have removed, anyway, I'm getting too into this, but you could have removed parts of the side and then extended a little bit further. I don't know. In any case, it's done, whatever the situation
is. Good. I mean, again,
thank goodness it's not real.
Yeah. But, I mean, I was just saying, I mean, from an outsider, I mean, it's an enjoyable thing. And yeah, I mean, I agree. I hope that we get into a little bit of the internal mechanics, and maybe that was a part of this episode too. I mean, it definitely was. Maybe that was part of the plan.
Setup too.
Yeah. And we're kind of this dealt with her feud with the queen, and we've kind of overcome that. So maybe this was our political aspect and pecking order and do this, don't do that.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully we're fully integrated. I didn't actually address that, though. There really isn't that kind of a pecking order. I mean, the queen doesn't actually run the entire... I mean, I'm pretty sure most people realize that one person does not determine what is or is not acceptable. There's like hundreds of people that are behind the scenes. And most of them could care less. But, I mean, we love the queen, but like we could care less whether or not she feels like we're living our best lives. Other than the fact that we like her and we appreciate her point of view, she's certainly not the matriarch of the entire fair. She's another, you know, she's a teammate. She's a colleague. She's somebody that you work with. So of course that's for plot device, but she does make one comment when Amanda is trying to kind of get on her good side at their breakfast meeting. Where she says, you know, we're not in the habit of exiling anyone. And the way she said it was like, look, I don't have to like you, but I'm not in the habit of, we don't exile people. You know, like, it's true. We don't have to like each other, but that's fine. We can still coexist. You don't need my approval. It's basically what the queen was saying, even though she does eventually give her approval. You know, it's not necessary. Like, you keep picking things apart from a negative standpoint. You need to just be and let go and be a part of this instead of a part of it, you know, apart from it. So anyway, that's my take on the queen. She has a lot. She's a very broad caricature, and she's kind of one of those people that's really hard to remember that, you know, she's an actual person because she is so much of a caricature, but then there's like those human moments where she actually sort of breaks out and is like a real person. So it's good to see that, and the actress does a really good job with that.
Right.
Next week it looks like Amanda's friends come and invade the fair. So my Coming Attractions got cut off in my recording, so I didn't get to see the whole Coming Attractions for next week. But it looks like it's going to be fairly amusing. I think it's going to kind of showcase the fact that Amanda is now fully integrating into the Renfair, starting to really enjoy her job and do well at it. And I think from what I saw, her friends are kind of horrified by the way that she's living and what she's, how she's behaving. And, you know, I think this is the point in which they start to think that she's actually joined up, because there was that in the trailer of the original. So it looks like it's interesting.
I mean, those are always, or they're usually amusing kinds of things to watch, even though they are terrifying in real life when the worlds collide. It should be good. It should be good. The whole thing of, I mean, I'm sure a fair amount of disbelief from the friends and a lot of shock factor, but it'll be good. Because I also kind of feel like Amanda's to the point where she, once the unease, she gets over the unease, she will enjoy the whole, she will enjoy their observations, I guess, their shock at her current predicament. So, yeah, it should be good.
Right. Okay. Sounds good. I agree with that. it's been a long day. It's time to go. So this week we had to delay it until Wednesday due to personal meetings that got postponed schedule-wise. So I think next week, which is a better day for you? Is Tuesday or Wednesday a better day?
I'm trying to think. I don't know. I whatever's good for you, to be honest. I'm not sure that it matters really on my end. So
okay. People play it out here. We'll keep everybody updated. Maybe Wednesdays, it may be Tuesdays. Yeah. Let's just say for the sake of saying, maybe next week we'll do Tuesday and see if we get more callers in. Again, you're always welcome to call in and speak to us live. We really would appreciate it. If you have any questions, if you don't work for us, for the fair, but you like the show, tell us what you like about the show, tell us what you don't like about the show, and if you have any questions for me or Josh, feel free to give us a call, let us know. Guest call-in, again, is 516-531-9788. It's the same every week, so if you want to write that down and just keep it in mind, and of course, we always do participate in the chat. I did see that we did have one of my friends, Amy Sue Wayweck, has joined and has been listening for quite some time. Hope it hasn't been boring for you guys. And really, eventually, I will get tired of telling Renfair stories, so I apologize for running off. But it's the first time there's really a show that has to deal with anything to do with my life, and I'm really excited about it. But in any case, thank you for bearing with me, all of you. And
I mean, I don't want to. Do what?
Go ahead. You don't want to what?
Well, I mean, the show is a fictional show, but it's nice to have that context in it. So,
yeah.
But it's not. It's a lot of fun and games, but it's not all fun and games.
No, it's not. But it is really a lot of fun and games. Even when it's work, it's still fun. And, you know, that's the important part. That's why we do it. If it was not fun in any way, shape, or form, why bother? And at the same time, if it was all fun and games, then everybody would be doing it, and everybody can't do it.
Very true.
So there's a balance. In any case, we will be back next week to deal with episode 4. I'm really looking forward to it. And do we know if this is a mini-series or if this is a series?
I don't know. I thought about that earlier when we were talking about character development.
Because I think they have the first 10.
I don't know.
Right. I think they have the first 10 episodes. Like, I think they have the back 9. But I don't think they have the full third. I don't have the back. I remember the terminology for it, but they have 10 episodes. But I don't know if it's a full season. Like, I don't know if they would be doing like a 22 episode season, or if it would be like Game of Thrones, you know, where they do like, you know, 10 episodes a season, and then we have to wait an entire year. Who knows? I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to go. I have to go to bed and get up for work.
Okay.
So I will talk to you guys next week. And thanks again, Josh, for joining me. And hopefully we'll have call-ins next week. Okay.
Fun times.
Talk to you soon, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.